Thanks, Chair. We have received the following apologies from the Minister, from the Deputy Minister, and also from Mr. Foss. Those are the questions. And Honorable Krumbok as well. Okay, thanks, Chair. Thank you very much. So, I'm not sure. I think all the members from the department know the members that are here, unless you want us to introduce them. But is there anybody that the members do not know from the department that would need introduction?
No.
Thank you. Some of the members will defer adoption of minutes because we are not quorum. I am now open to the CEO and I'll open to SAT to give the presentation. But before you start presenting, we are aware that you've already submitted your Strat 10 and APP, and we'll be dealing with that in May. And also, we would like to upfront to congratulate you on the improvement of stakeholder meetings. The stakeholders are aware that you are around, SAT is around, the CO is around, and they now begin to talk SAT. I think that is very good, and we really appreciate that. And we are also aware of the quality of the efforts of the quality assurance in SAT, but we would like you to give us more information around quality assurance. The achievement of the targets, we are not so happy, particularly domestic tourism, but we hope you'll take us through that one. And also, if you can just give us a snapshot of how far is the SSA dealing with the statistics so that you are able to get statistics timeously. We are also concerned of the congestion at OR Tambo, and would like to know from you how far are you talking or discussions with Home Affairs so that our international tourists do not experience what they're experiencing for eternal. The xenophobic and afrophobic attacks. Is SAT communicating with the Africa region that still South Africa is safe? This is only happening in one area. The entity is now having 200 million the previous year and this year on domestic tourism. Can you account for that one? Because seemingly, domestic tourism targets are really not quite met. Foreign currency exposure, are you able now or are you in the process of dealing with that particular one? And there has been generally no achievement of targets. I'm sure you've talked on that one. And if we can just get clarity in your presentation on business events in the country. Thank you very much. I'm handing over to you, SAT. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the portfolio, and also the colleagues from the National Department of Tourism. My name is Enver Dumini. I am a member of the South African Tourism Board of Directors. I am also the CEO for Cape Town Tourism. The reason for my attendance is in support of this amazing team, and just to also make sure that from a director's perspective, we are also involved in any forms of discussions around the strategy and anything else that's going forward. What I would like to do as well is just introduce the team. Mr. Sisa Nchona, who is the Chief Executive Officer for South African Tourism. We've got Thembisa Dlamini, the Chief Operating Officer. We've got Mr. Tom Bower, the Chief Financial Officer. And then somebody that is special to us we would like to interview is Homolemo Mabiane behind us. She's from the SAT team. She's the one that's in the trenches putting together the reports. And the CEO, in his wisdom, said that also part of what we need to do is bring through the young talent so that they don't just write the reports, but they can also understand the context. So I want to commend him for that mission. So going forward, I'll just hand over to the CEO and the team to take you through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Inva, and good morning to the Chair and the Honourable Members. I will take you through the organizational performance for the Q3 report. The report has been submitted to you, and I'm sure you've interrogated in that regard. So I will not be going through line by line, but I will be highlighting some of the key and important aspects of the report. And as always, we look forward to the interaction and the questions that come behind. Thank you. I'm going to be spending a lot of time around our KPIs because it's important to measure ourselves against the benchmark that we've set ourselves. How far have we done? Where have we not come right, basically? And what it is that we're going to do about it to make sure that we come right in that perspective. The first one that I'd like to open with is around statistics. And the difference that we have between calendar reporting versus financial year-end reporting. As we sit at the moment, the numbers that you have in front of you in terms of the statistics, the number of visitors that we have is calendar year. It is from January to September, the 9 months. However, we are dealing with the financial year performance, basically, of April to December. This is where the disjuncture happens, where you have an offset there. And I believe this is a long-standing issue with the committee. And maybe let me reiterate in terms of why we find ourselves in the space that we are in. Status A, which is really our source of information, reports on calendar year, January to December. Secondly, as well, is that we are part of UNWTO, whereby we also submit part of our numbers in terms of the global framework there. The issue we have specifically is that for compliance reasons, we have to submit our statistics within 30 days after the quarter closes. And at that stage, what we have is only the Stats SA figures. We submit the stats to Treasury. We submit the stats to Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. So that's kind of how we embed them in there. It takes us another month thereafter to actually slice and dice and segment it to be in line with the financial year end. What this would mean essentially is that if we don't submit in those 30 days, we will fall foul of a compliance issue. The solution that we have going forward is since we meet with the portfolio committee sometime after the quarter closes, we will submit those figures. We'll submit the calendar figures as submitted officially to Treasury and DME, but by then we would have also segmented out for the financial reporting period. So you'll start to see both calendar year and also financial year, basically, because we just don't want to fall foul on the compliance side. A very good question was asked. So this can't be a permanent fixture. However, there is work happening around with Stats SA. We are re-looking at the whole, or they are re-looking at the whole model in terms of how they compile statistics and the rigor that they apply on that one. There's also the ministerial committee, which is led by the minister's advisor, together with Grant Thornton, and they're essentially looking at how do we compile our statistics so they be consistent, number one, and number two, that they are timely sent out. So I thought let me provide the context as we go through those numbers. So just to reiterate, on the financial performance side, we are definitely looking at the financial period from April to December. However, on the tourism statistics, it is from January to September. It's the 9 months, basically, from the perspective. Okay, if we start to look at our 14 KPIs that we measure ourselves and how have we fared against them, as we said, in terms of the Q3 performance statistics-wise, we have met four of the 14 targets. we have not achieved 5 of the 14 targets, and the remainder, basically, of the other 5 are pending financial year end, because those can only come through when those ones, for those are annual kind of measurements on that side. The first one, let me start with kind of what has gone well, the number of international tourist arrivals. I think it's common cause, you know, from the media and kind of from the environment, that we've seen a remarkable improvement within the tourism activity space. I think we've seen growth from all of our markets. I think the slowest market that we've grown in was in Australia at about 4%. But generally across the board, we are very positive and bullish about how the performance has kind of come through. We have hit, and I have to hold myself back because I don't want to talk about the current as of today, so I have to keep on looking backwards. You know, in terms of the performance there, you know, we've hit some really phenomenal figures, and we've hit the target basically in terms of the international arrival. So I can't see this one. Oh, perfect, thank you. Yeah, right. In terms of the quarterly performance, basically, of our targets, which was 2.2 million, and we achieved 2.4 million. Aggregated as well from Q1, Q2, Q3, we are really geared to kind of really achieve some of those figures there. And I'll talk a bit later in terms of some of the initiatives that we've done and where the source market has really seen them come alive in that regard. It is also important that this also is seen within the backdrop of the disastrous, very difficult 2015 year, where we literally had a dip. So we are starting to recover, basically, and kind of have a growth relative to where we were at before previously. So that is coming through quite nicely as well. The second one, basically, is looking at the leisure tourism market portfolio, where we're starting to see a nice mix coming through in that regard in terms of some of the activities that we've done on the leisure tourism market. The MIF, you know, which talked about the framework that we use to choose where we invest, which markets we invest, and how deep we invest in them, basically. Some of those impacts are starting to come through. We will become sharper as to how we engage in those spaces. Stakeholder engagement, we've deliberately made a very concise effort to make sure that we start to bring industry on board. We interact with them. We interact also with our provincial tourism stakeholders. We interact with also our local tourism stakeholders. And even horizontally across government itself, where we start to bring in and create relationships around the likes of Home Affairs, the likes of DERCO, and the likes of Brand South Africa, et cetera, because they also form part of the ecosystem, basically, within tourism. We also remain our status of an unqualified audit, and it's something we're very proud of that we want to achieve and kind of keep in place in that regard. What are some of the challenges as we speak, and where do we see ourselves in that regard? I think the chair is very right to say domestic tourism, the volumes are down. And there's a whole host of factors that we can attribute to some of the stickiness that we see around the space. It's been 2 years, definitely, within our journey of being allocated an incremental 100 million rand to boost domestic tourism. You've heard the narrative of before where we had to create a culture of travel within South Africa and really bring about awareness, making sure that we also instill tourism becoming something to look forward to in that regard. We are also going through an OD process where we are restructuring ourselves as an organization. This restructuring is really brought through by the need to make sure that we have become a performance-based environment so that all of these plans that we put in the APP and the strategic medium-term document are able to achieve. So what we're doing now is just rejigging ourselves and make sure that we've got the right people in the right places, basically, doing the right things in the environment. There's a very deliberate effort within our org structure to boost domestic tourism in terms of capacity, in terms of people, in terms of focus as well, so that we can become very deliberate in that regard. It is also very worrying of us, because when you look at most tourism-heavy economies, the domestic tourism space becomes a key driver. It's, you know, in South Africa, it's other way around, very light, basically, on the domestic tourism side. Also, as well, we are looking at collaborating and working much closer with our provincial authorities. I think that's a space that's probably been lacking and not as good previously, whereby we align ourselves with the provinces, make sure that they understand our agenda is aligned, and vice versa, so that we're able to support the activities and really start to generate some of these key activities that are happening between there. Whether we use events as a key pull driver, basically, or whether we use our marketing efforts to get South Africa, to move within South Africa, to make sure that we can explore our areas, not just the only obvious ones, but also making sure that our geographical spread, you know, the smaller provinces, what we call the hidden gems at times, are also elevated and brought through across on that side as well. The next one I want to take you through is just to add one thing as well. So when we look at the domestic space, it is really made up of three key areas. It is the VFR, which is about 78%, 70% basically of the domestic tourism heaviness there. There is also the holiday trips and also business trips as well that kind of make up that segment. But for the purposes of our KPIs, we measure ourselves on the holiday trips because this is the area that we can have direct control over and influence some of those changes basically. So we'll come through on that side. The next one I'd like to talk about is total tourism revenue. And the revenue is obviously linked to the volume of activity that we've got to see come over that side. Again, our Africa land still is the leading contributor to our international tourist arrivals, basically, within the country. And Gauteng province is still the province, basically, that starts to have higher market share relative to other provinces, basically, within this space as well. The revenue, therefore, is also linked to the volume that starts to come through. And again, this is pulled down by the domestic tourism numbers that you've seen and how we start to pull them through across on that side. Again, I have to hold myself that we're speaking up till September last year. The picture has fundamentally changed to where we're at. And I think if you have any cursory conversation with industry, you'll get a sense in terms of it's a booming space, there's growth within this environment, basically. And it's fueled by a couple of things. One of them, our weak exchange rate helped us, but we've got to be very careful as to not drive our strategies around the weak currency, because essentially you start to commoditize yourself as a cheap destination. When the currency changes, as an example, or strengthens, then that puts you out of the picture. We have to be a value destination in that regard, you know, and I think that's kind of some of the messages that we're starting to send through on that perspective. Brand positivity. We had a conversation, even our Q2 reporting, basically on this, and this really starts to measure how we are perceived as a country, especially in our source markets, as a desirable destination to come through. I think it's important as well that there's a whole lot of mix that goes into the brand positivity measure as well. There's been some areas where we've been let down by certain activities where we've been profiled as being not such an inviting country. And I'll name two examples just to highlight this. The one is the xenophobic attacks. That had a really big impact on how South Africa is seen as not a welcoming environment, basically. And that has started to have a negative picture around, especially on the continent, but also around the world as well, as to where we are not seen as to being an inviting destination. The second part is, you know, issues around our crime and safety and policing, where we saw previously this was improving, but it just takes one or two instances to trigger it, basically, start to come through. And I'll give you a real-life example of the recent attacks of Chinese tourists, as an example, in Johannesburg. That trended more in China than in South Africa. And you can imagine, basically, the amplification of that really doesn't set us in a positive light within that environment. We use brand positivity to also measure our effectiveness of our marketing campaigns in country. Can people recall South Africa? Is it something that they also look forward to, and what goes into that mix as well? So, you know, brand positivity does have a whole lot of criteria that we use to be able to measure as to what's coming through. There is stuff that is in our control that we measure. There's also stuff that is out of our control. One of the areas I spoke about is our collaboration with Brand South Africa. Brand South Africa is really the agency that's charged with looking at the image, the image of positivity around Brand South Africa. Tourism exists within Brand South Africa in itself from a global perspective, and we are aligning our activities to make sure that there's consistent messages around South Africa, and we also start to align ourselves as to how we start to pull through on that side. I will then talk a little bit about our grading. This is the grading council, talking about the establishments and also talking about the graded rooms as well in that regard. Grading is important from the perspective that it really becomes the anchor of our quality assurance. It really aligns with what we go around the world and in the country saying, this is the brand promise that we bring out there. And the quality assurance basically makes sure that this brand promise is also felt and delivered when people start to experience the product. Otherwise, there'll be a disconnect between what we say and what we do in that regard. So that becomes important. The mandate of the Grading Council, we're also looking at stretching it far beyond just grading establishments, but bring about a quality assurance or a visitor experience across the entire ecospace to make sure that the experience of our visitors, tourists coming in basically, both internationally and domestically, is positive. And if there are any service failures, those are adequately addressed and come through on that side. When you look at some of our KPIs around graded accommodation establishments and the graded rooms, which are actually interlinked, there are some challenges in that regard there. We found ourselves as a domestic environment in a bit of a tight economic environment where tough choices had to be made. We are looking literally at beefing up our whole value proposition around the grading council, really coming through with a very clear and succinct value proposition as to why establishments should become part of the grading council. What are the benefits of getting graded versus to not getting graded? And we want to show that very clearly and very deliberately that this is part of the activities that actually start to drive through on that side. So that becomes important in terms of how we look at the establishments. So on a quarterly basis, we had a target of 1,400. We came through at 1,200. And again, we are building deliberately awareness into the space. We are also amalgamating the various parts of the business into one SA Tourism. Because previously, it was kind of split into three. Grading Council by itself, the Conventions Bureau by itself, and also essentially what I call the leisure market, essentially by itself. We want to create one organization that starts to have a seamless and consistent messaging as to how we bring through on these activities over here. In the Grading Council, we have a solution, what we call the bundle of benefits. And basically, this is an area we're looking at in terms of the value proposition that we offer people, establishments, in order to be graded. What do they get back from it? What are the value proposition? Things like bulk buying, things like essentially, you know, whether we're looking at utensils such as cutlery, we look at bulk buying around things like Wi-Fi, airtime. We want to build all those things into one space. We also want to make sure that with National Treasury on the procurement side, that even on government expenditure on establishments, that they only use graded entities. It is there, but it's actually not being enforced, and we want to bring some more kind of highlight into that space as well. I'll also talk a little bit about the business event space, our Conventions Bureau. This is where I'm highlighting it's part of our KPIs, but it's not due for reporting because it comes through annually at the end of the year. And essentially this one is very difficult to measure from quarter to quarter because we have a bidding process that actually runs more than just a quarterly environment, basically. But we segmented and looked at it over a year. This is one space of the business that is doing very well for us. We are quite competitive in this space, and if you look at just our averages, you know, in the bids, in the number of bids that we put through, basically, what is the number of success? You know, out of those we report, what is basically the percentage of success? And we're seeing around a 70% success rate in terms of the bids that we have in there, basically in that regard. We are also building in more capabilities around our convention space so that we not only look at the big conventions, we also start to look at the smaller conferences that can be catered for within some of the smaller provinces. You know, talking about meetings in for about 500, 600 people basically can be catered for. You don't need a convention center to be able to drive those meetings. So it's about also making sure there's geographic spread. At the moment, all of our efforts around geographic spread are what we call about pre- and post-tours. So when there is a big conference at one of the ICCs, we tend to let on other smaller provinces to be part of the pre-tours or post-tours in that environment. But then that becomes quite quick. So we want to make sure that we bring about the smaller conferences, meetings, incentives into the provinces. There's an element of capacity building as well. Again, it talks to our collaboration and partnership with the provinces where we start to build the capacity so that they are able to host and take care of these meetings and conferences in that space as well. The number of business delegates that we've put ourselves basically for the year is 77,000 versus to the number of events is about 138,000. I'm very comfortable with this and that it's tracking quite nicely, and we will be able to meet and actually exceed some of these targets as well. Very important to note that these are also very valuable in terms of a spend basis, because a business tourist essentially spends about 2.5 times more than a leisure tourist. So that expenditure relationship is also quite important, basically, for us in that regard as we start to drive through some of those activities there. I'll speak also as well about our stakeholder satisfaction score. And again, this measures about how effective are we in engaging. And I'm not just talking about engagement, but meaningful engagement, where we start to bring our stakeholders. We have a very wide base of stakeholders across the board. And so the messaging needs to be consistent. The messaging needs to be complete, but it also needs to be deliberate in that regard. We are solely focused as an organization on our strategy that you've heard before of what we call 5 and 5, bringing about an incremental 5 million tourists, right, in the next 5 years. And that is split between 4 million international and 1 million domestic. So that is a message that we carry throughout there, 5 and 5. So when we do interact with our provincial tourism authority colleagues, we also want to bring them along on this 5 and 5. When we do interact with industry, we want to bring them along in 5 and 5, because it's one area that we don't activate, we don't execute, but we rely on industry to be the one that they actually start to convert and make sure that they can also drive as a country towards one goal of driving 5 and 5 in that regard. So that becomes important. It's an annual dipstick that we take, and again, the results of this will only come through after Q4 once we've kind of gone around from that perspective on that side. Similarly to the staff satisfaction score, we thought it was important that it also becomes part of our KPIs. You know, we don't sell widgets. You know, we don't sell products. So therefore, our biggest assets are indeed our people. We want to make sure that we've got engaged people. We want to make sure that we've got competent people who are able to execute what they need to do. We also need to support them from a growth development perspective as well, and for them to be meaningfully engaged within the organization. Succession planning becomes a key and important area that we look at to make sure there is continuity beyond what I call our terms in office. But we start to build a very robust element basically within it. It is also our duty as a national body to make sure we start to contribute towards the transformation story in South Africa. How do we become a source, a hunting ground, as it were, basically, for either the private sector, industry, anyone, to really recognize, you know, SA Tourism as being the best in breed in terms of employees. That is something that we're willing and able to drive through on that side. So our staff satisfaction score is a really important indicator for us as the exco team and also our board, if I may, as to how we are moving through on that side. The percentage of staff turnover is also linked basically to the staff satisfaction score. Even more important, when we do have colleagues leave, it's important to find out why, so that we can quantify them. It's not a problem to have people leave, but they must leave for what I call positive reasons. You know, are they going to bigger and better? And part of maybe what I may be saying contradictory stuff is that it's also not bad for people to leave to go into industry with us. Then we have what I call ambassadors for us, who are actually within the space, who understand some of our journeys and what the things that we need to do basically to drive from their perspective. So it's something that is really, really becomes important for us as we move through in that environment. Again, the percentage of staff turnover, and let me talk a little bit about this one. We suspended all new appointments unless we call them critical until we finish with this organizational development process, which is due to end at the end of March. Literally, we are 2 weeks away from finalizing it. We have a number of what are called contract workers, and those are in place literally to hold the place together so it doesn't fall down. But more importantly, come 1 April, we want to really start to fill up all of our vacancies that we have and also not rely on contractors, but to have a full staff complement of people in the right places doing the right things, basically, from their perspective. Our operating model has fundamentally changed, as I earlier alluded to, really towards more becoming a performance-based environment driven by fives and five, right? And where we track ourselves on a monthly and a quarterly basis, are we indeed getting closer to that five and five, so that we can start to divide where does this 5 million come from? Where are these source markets? How are we measuring and how are we dividing them along the source markets as well? More importantly is what kind of investments are we making in those markets for the activities that we see? We see great opportunities. As a continent, Africa only has 3% of the world's tourism market, so there's great upside to it as well from that regard. And there are threats that I can categorically see starting to happen in that regard. The continent is starting to wake up as to the power and the value of tourism. Just to give you a sense, I was with the minister at a recent ITB conference in Germany, and you could see the investment that African markets are making, basically, on tourism, decreasing the reliance on resources, which will ultimately deplete at the end of the day. But however, this is a service industry with high margin and is an export driver. So we really have to make sure that we don't lose our competitive edge as South Africa and make sure that we start to bring in, you know, and lead the continent as far as the tourism activity and space is concerned. I think that's kind of something that we always throw an eye upon and making sure that we start to move on that side as well. Again, reiterate, domestic tourism is a clear, deliberate focus for us. We want to be sharper. We want to be more deliberate in that space as well and actually start to bring in more resources to drive the activity that we want to see. However, we're also doing this in the backdrop of an economy that is very stuck. We have 0.3% growth, basically, of our GDP. We've seen, you know, some taxes being increased in certain segments of our personal income tax as well. And the inflation rate is probably hovering about 5-6%. So we are having a compete for a share of wallet, essentially. So we want to be clear around the share of value proposition. Our short-lived campaign is also doing satisfactory well, whereby we start to pull through a lot of awareness around that side. And we've been driving awareness, a lot of awareness around it, where we're trying to say that travel can be affordable. Travel can be affordable, and we start to put some of those activities coming through over there. So if you look at some of our website activity around the space, we've seen a nice kind of uptick, and number of visits to our website have increased on the short left side. What we're not able to do, though, is to look at conversion. That becomes important. It's great to do awareness, but how many of those actually convert into actually tourism trips starting to be taken and coming through? You know, that becomes important. Our statistics also becomes important, that we re-look in terms of how we compile our statistics and the methodology that we use. We still use a very manual labor intensive way of actually doing surveys, of actually doing a lot of this statistics gathering. You know, the sample sizes are relatively small, so therefore we extrapolate a lot of stuff and infer on them. We want to bring in a bit more technology and into the space so that we can have a bit more real-time granular information and a better picture of where we stand. Statistics becomes important. We have dedicated a whole new section within our new organizational structure that talks to insights and analytics. This becomes the hub. This becomes the space that our market intelligence really comes from there, so that we can be more deliberate in terms of how we invest in those spaces, basically, and whom we invest with. Collaboration is going to become part of the game in terms of how we start to drive some of these activities start to come through on that side. We are also grateful that we made our case to National Treasury around some incremental funding requests that we put through to them. And as you would have seen in the budget speech, the finance minister did allocate an amount of 494 million rands, basically, to tourism, you know, to grow the space. Just to kind of give you a sense of this 494 million rands, it is already included within our APPs and our MTF. So, number one, that's kind of already in there, although it was announced only in February, but we were aware of this before. The second part of it, basically, is that it's over a three-year period. And also, lastly, about 200 million of it is sitting with the National Department of Tourism to look at the infrastructure development, to make sure that the products are grown, that are new, that are different, that start to come into capacity based in that space. We also have a bidding fund that is with the Conventions Bureau that has been further supported to make sure that we're able to compete on a global scale for some of these conventions that we start to bring them across. The other thing that we're doing deliberately around the conventions is we're starting to reach out to areas like academia, to areas like research institutes, to, again, give them the confidence for them to be able to put up their hand, and we can support them for bringing some of these initiatives through. The balance, basically, is about 170 million is going to further investment in terms of our market investment framework. We have come through with some countries that we want to deliberately invest in from that perspective and also start to drive through from some of that activity. Also working closely with DECO. As I said, tourism, we can probably only cover physically 10 countries where we've got physical presence, but we are hubbing some countries, so that gives us reach of about 34 countries. But with the partnership and collaboration that we have with DECO, I think they have about 130 embassies across the world. So it gives us nice points of presence to be able to service those spaces and make sure that we start to drive some of this activity that we have over there. As I sort of come to the end, and I'll probably throw it to some of my colleagues to add a couple of things over there, I just want to talk a little bit around the xenophobic attacks and what impact they had, basically, on SA tourism and some of the issues that we saw there. Particularly in Nigeria, in Lagos, we took a decision as a management team to close our offices for about 2 days. Again, it was more about we saw the backlash of in Lagos particularly, where we saw South African companies being under threat, and I'm talking about physically under threat, basically, for some of these reprisals from our Nigerian colleagues. MTN is an example of one company where I think one of their properties were actually damaged. So to recover from all of this takes some time, but we are deliberately engaging with what's called influencers. We want people to experience South Africa. We want people after the experience of South Africa to be able to talk about it, basically, and actually share a positive essence, basically, around from that perspective. I'm just going to hand over to our CFO, Tom, just to talk through some of our figures where we find ourselves right from our income, and he can touch a little bit in terms of what this means for us in terms of from a currency perspective, and where we find ourselves, you know, by the end of the financial year, which is in 2 weeks' time, and some of those issues in that regard. So, Tom, I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I will stick to the presentation. I will also, Madam Chair, I will also, at the right at the end, discuss the currency exposure of the Treasury, what we have done in that regard, if you are in agreement with that. I think first, if I look at the first slide, the revenue streams that we are getting the money from, the first one is the National Department of Tourism. The reason for 121 kind of variance is that every year we need to approach the National Treasury to give us an upfront payment so that we can mitigate the currency exposures in the different countries. So that is the reason, because they give the money upfront to us, we put it in the foreign countries, in the bank accounts, to mitigate the risk. For us this year, it was kind of a very valuable and also kind of a very decision that Treasury took to give us that money. We have approached them for next year again. They have not disputed that, so we hope we will get the same from them. Then other income. Other income consists of, I'll come to that in the next slide, but the reason for the kind of the underspend there is that some of the bid parties has not paid us yet for the other income for Indaba and for Meetings Africa, but we are on the case, we have submitted the invoices, so we hope we will get the money before the financial year closure. I am in engagement with the different provinces to assist us with that. The Tourism Business Council of South Africa, the budget was a very conservative budget, which is agreed with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. And the total budget was 99,500,000, and at the end, right at the year end, they have kind of transferred about 124 million rand towards that over the year. So that's the reason for the variation. There was more money that they have generated through the Tomsa levy payers. If I turn over to the next slide, I think this is more the quarter, as the committee has requested previously. How do we compare the quarter to the quarter? I think the first thing is that the government revenue, I've explained. The other income is made up, especially in the second quarter, I think Honourable Adams has asked quite a few times about when are you going to kind of post the Indaba revenue. This is what we have done there. So you look at 63 million rand second quarter, and that's the Indaba revenue that we've received also. And also during that period, we've received TIP funding, Tourism Incentive Program funding from the National Department of Tourism to support us in the Indaba, and also in terms of the grading council to subsidize the fees for establishment. If we go to the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, I think we must put it in perspective. Why are there a kind of a dip from the first quarter to the second quarter? The agreement with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa is that from that transfer, they transfer to us 15% of that transfer are going to be in a collaborative fund between South African Tourism and the Tourism Business Council. They will then also then decide which projects, as a kind of a partnership, which projects they're going to invest in those money. So that is the reason for it down from 35 to 31. That's a 15% down from that. From next year onwards, it will kind of stabilize unless we collect more revenue from that. I think I have responded on that one. If I move to the next slide, the performance in terms of administration is 216 million rand, and it's made up. The 216 million rand is made up of personnel, the business information systems, and then also a lot of that is travel and subsistence, which we are paying from that. Marketing, and I think we try to be true to what we are doing, let our money go for marketing. You will see up to now 78% for marketing and 22% for other for made up by administration. So we try to have that balance in terms of that our mandate is marketing, so the money will go to marketing. If I turn over to the next slide, I think that is the first one, administration. The reason for the underspending also there is that there was a lot, as the CEO has referred to. We're busy with the OD process. We do not appoint, unless it's critical positions, permanent positions. We have appointed a lot of contract workers, and not a lot, a few, and then also temp workers to assist us, which is much cheaper. And also remember, the CEO position was quite, for a while, vacant. The internal audit position was vacant, and also country managers in the Netherlands and Australia is vacant at the moment. So there was quite a lot of savings in that. What did we do with that money? We have reallocated it back to marketing so that they can invest in marketing and in other markets. So that money was reallocated to marketing. So that's what we're doing with that. If I look at the marketing expenditure, the reasons for the slow spending there in the fourth quarter is the domestic marketing. I think the members have already kind of alluded to that, and the CEO also has kind of talked to that. But the CEO then, at the beginning of this calendar year, in January, the CEO has then kind of called a task team together. He's leading that task team to make sure that we do the right things and the money is invested in the right markets in terms of the right places in terms of the domestic expenditure. Digital marketing, I think we've already in the second quarter referred to that, and we've referred to that in the first quarter. There was 12 million rand available to consolidate all the platforms, the digital platforms. We are, as we sit here, everything has been finalized, that the new platform will be rolled out on the 20th of April in the next financial year. So we have done, everything is done. So I think that after in the fourth quarter, you will not see that. So that was the reason for the delay also. Then Africa was also kind of underspent. They had also put some measures in place. There's a program with deliverables which they have kind of rolled out for them. So the three things that was kind of underspent was Africa, domestic, and the digital that was kind of done. Madam Chair, if I go to the last slide, I think this is also on request of the committee, is that in terms of the different programs, the administration, I think the one thing that you might ask us, why is there a kind of a 56 million rand actual in administration? The reason for that is, remember, we have refurbished our, there was a kind of a refurbishment of our building, we have extended our parking areas, and in terms of our accounting standards, we need to disclose that revenue, and that's why it looks like there's no less spending. But if you add it back, it's a non-cash item. If you add it back, it brings you to about 2 million rand. Difference between the two, but that's the accounting standard we're applying in terms of that. The increase in annual foreign arrivals of South Africa, and also the fourth one, increase in revenue collection. Also underspent is roadshows in India. The roadshow in India was in, I see this in the third quarter, I think I made a mistake, I apologize for this, it should be in the fourth quarter. The India roadshow was in February, it went well, so all the money was kind of spent in that, in the fourth quarter. Africa Media Buy, I've already discussed that. And the office, the closure of Italy office, that is about 15 million rand. The money was already spent, but we haven't done the final reconciliation. As we said here, the final reconciliation has been done. We have posted that money, so Italy is then also closed. The only thing in Italy that we still is a very operational thing, which still need to close, where we struggle a bit, is the closing of the bank account, and there are kind of technical issues around that. It's in terms of they want letters of authority in Italian. We send it in English. They refer it back. As we speak, we are busy to solve that problem. So then Italy will also be history in terms of the office closure. If I go to the underspend in the grading council, they have kind of, the first thing is that the position study contract, as well as the change in planned media and activities, they've changed that a bit. And also they went up in a tender to replace the QIT system, the current QIT system which they use for the credit establishment. The tender that was not approved due to kind of technical issues, so they're just continuing for the next year with QIT. And the tender will be busy doing the RFA now as we speak, and they will then go out and tender for that. That money was also then reallocated, the savings there was reallocated to support the Meetings Africa and other high-risk priorities. The events, and that's what I've already alluded to, is that the overspend is because we have not received the funds from the performance parties. But as I said previously, earlier in my presentation, that money, invoices were submitted, and we are waiting for them to pay that. We have confirmed with one of the provinces that the money is in the bank account. They're just waiting for the invoices, of our invoices, to check it and release the money. I think, Chair, then if I can go back to your question, right, as part of the opening remarks, in terms of the currency exposure, and I think the CEO, kind of also referred to that. We've received new money. The Treasury was very clear. What they haven't done in the past, they didn't give us any budget rates. They gave us their budget rates in the major currencies that we must use. So there's no, we cannot go back to them to get more money. And secondly, they was very clear to say this new money must also mitigate the risk of currency exposures. But if, so that we've done. Secondly, what I've also done is that the upfront payment, that every year they give us an upfront payment to mitigate the risk, but at the moment it was in our favor, but it can, you know, if things change in future, it might not be in our favor. The third thing on that is that also they have, I don't see my notes here. They've also helped us in terms, I think, Madam Chair, we have requested them to look at our procurement thresholds. They've also relaxed the procurement thresholds for foreign countries, only for foreign countries from 500,000 rand for free quotes to 750,000 rand for them to be more efficient. So they've also helped us with that, and that was kind of a big achievement, I think, which we have achieved from National Treasury. And then if there's huge currency exposures, we will have to go back to the adjustment estimate and then requesting funds for adjustment estimate. This is also through to DIRCO and all the people, or all the departments who are faced with currency exposure. So the Treasury is kind of very strict now on the threshold or the kind of the ceiling that they're giving to the departments and public entities. They will not bail us out if there is not huge currency exposure. So I think that is what we have done up till now, and the feedback that they gave us in writing for the currency exposure. I hope I have responded to your question. But I'm sure I think that's what my financial story is. We are at the moment 77, not at the moment, at the third quarter, we were 77% of our expenditure. So if I look at that, we're on track. We had a meeting, extraordinary extra meeting in the beginning of March, the second of March, and we as Exco were sitting and kind of reassessed the whole transfer of payments and expenditure, and I think we're on track. In terms of that, we will achieve our expenditure targets. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Tom. I think just to reiterate, very comfortable and confident around our finances. We have always had clean audits. We will maintain that. It's part of our key deliverables on that side. But we also want to make sure that our ratio between overheads and core investment is always maintained and not breached. Otherwise, we may be too heavy, basically, on overhead and kind of not going through enough on that side. So confident that we'll finish the year off without any unspent money around it, basically, and we want to make sure we drive from that regard. I'll touch quickly on two things before I close and back. The first one is that we had a Meetings Africa, and again, I mean, this is not part of the Q3 reporting, but I think it's important to kind of give you a sense. A Meetings Africa conference basically in Johannesburg, really looking about the business event space, very well attended, good exhibitioners, good also buyers as well. It was also a continent-wide type of purely business tourism activity over there. I think I saw also Honorable Foss there for a couple of days as well, and I think he also got a positive sense and feeling basically from it, and how we profile South Africa as a desirable destination to hold conventions, conferences, meetings, and incentives basically. We are now also in full swing for Indaba, which is basically happening 16 to 18 May in Durban. Indications are also quite good in that space. We are actively trying to make sure that we really put together one of the best endeavors that are basically around as well. We also very deliberately have increased our participation of what we call the hidden gems, which are actually SMEs, into the space. I think we've got about 90 SME exhibitors that are coming through from some of our, Tom talked about the tourism incentive program and the funding that we get from the department. This is some of the results of that funding coming through. And what we did on that one is that we got into a partnership with SATSA, South African Travel Agency Association, basically, where they mentored, supported, and make sure that these entities become market-ready so that at Indaba they can close deals and conclude transactions, basically, from that regard. Governance is also quite an important aspect from us. And essentially, you know, we've also included some information around board participation. We've got a very active board. I can attest to that. Very robust as well. And true to form, they hold us accountable on some of the tactical issues that were there and give us direction, basically, as an executive team to make sure that we don't breach any of our timelines that we set ourselves. So what are the big things for us, basically, kind of looking forward? Indaba is basically one of them. Our own organizational development review is a big one as well. Change comes around with a lot of uncertainty. So we want to make sure that we are very deliberate, positioned, and narrowly focused as to how we actually start to come through across on that side. Our business model has also, operating model has also been adjusted, where we're starting to ask questions about certain things that we've outsourced before, whether they should be insourced, and vice versa. So making sure that we've got great capabilities to meet not only our compliance requirements, but also our business objectives. That becomes key. You know, so you know, things like from all the way from our reporting to our statistics, we're going to be a lot more succinct, basically, and start to deliver value. Collaborations really need to amount to efficiency. To give an example, there is an instrument that is called the four keys, basically, and essentially it's a predictive booking, forward booking kind of a model that kind of gives you a sense in terms of what your bookings like as a country looks forward for the next 6 months. Previously, we subscribed to this, but also the provinces individually subscribed to it. So what we've done now is that we are taking the master license and bring the provinces in so that we can start to work smarter and better from that perspective. Same thing around the insights, analytics, research as well. We'll really drive it and make sure it becomes open source, you know, for the other provinces and other local authorities. So with that, Chair, I'd like to put a pin on that, and we look forward to the questions and interaction that we've got. Thank you.
Thank you, SAT. Most unfortunately, we may attend Indaba, we may not attend Indaba, because it's happening midweek, and it's time for budget debate, and so we may be granted permission, we might not be granted permission. Questions, honourable members, honourable Kumbuk, I saw your hand up.
Yeah,
his hand was up before I asked for questions. Honourable Kumbuk, honourable Masele, honourable Adam, and Honourable Masele, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. On the slide 8, the domestic holiday trips achieved, there is a decline of 22%. Normally one would find increases and declines in the single-digit figures. 22% is very, very substantial, almost a quarter down. And although there's a reason for deviation, given as the South African economy underperforming and unemployment rising, it begs the question whether that can be the only reason. Because the decline is so huge that either the economy is doing either worse than we actually think, or there must be another reason for such a precipitous decline. And I wondered whether SAT have any modelling which can help them predict what domestic tourism might amount to with different econometric models in terms of internal growth. So if I was an economist and I had these figures, and in fact what the reason given here is true, I would expect a relatively small decline in disposable income to lead to a relatively great decline in domestic tourism. In other words, it would be very elastic. to use an economic term. And I'm wondering whether that is the case, and I'd like you just to provide a little bit more information on that decline of 22%, which may be entirely related to the economy, but I think it needs more than just the one sentence discussion or two in this case. On that particular point, my colleague, has, Honourable Foster, has made the point about promoting internal tourism. He's talked about free or discounted rates for South Africans. He's used the example of the cable car here in Cape Town, where you have a free trip if it's your birthday. And he's also referred to the situation where we have many, many tourist resorts in the smaller municipalities that are not well looked after and are quite run down, which of course we've seen in our two most recent oversight trips as well. Could you comment on to what extent you think that can help turn the situation around? Because it does seem as if you're creating a bad impression to begin with. You're not going to do very much to assist your cause in getting domestic tourism off the ground. Okay, then on the next page, on page slide 10, we talk about the rand's depreciation against major currency. Now, there was a slide of the rand down to 22 rands to the pound at one stage, or even 23 rands to the pound, similar kind of performance against the euro, and 17 rand to the dollar. That was some time ago, and at the moment the rand is actually quite strong. I mean, we're back to 13 rand to the dollar, and the rand has come back quite a bit in the last while, and I'm wondering why we're still talking about the depreciation against major currencies. And I'm assuming that on slide 10, it is still at that time when the rand was relatively weak. And you did say at the beginning that these reports, the financial side, just please correct me if I'm wrong, it's from January to September. So I take it would have been at that time when the rand was yet to recover, but then one would like to think that into 2017, with a much stronger rand vis-a-vis last year, we shouldn't have these currency fluctuation problems which inhibit our ability to market our country overseas. So a comment on that would be appreciated. And then my last question, Chair, for now, is the brand positivity rankings. So at the bottom of page 10, we have the positivity rankings for various countries in, you know, 25, 38, 39. What is the scale that we look at? I mean, is the maximum possible 100? What are the benchmarks that you establish in terms of brand positivity ratings? I know there's a number of things that can affect these. I understand from previous questions that it's done by way of interactive surveys and polling. But can you give us some kind of idea what you would consider to be an acceptable or reasonable brand positivity rating, so we can locate those numbers against the benchmark, which help us to understand whether we are doing okay or whether, in fact, we're below where we need to be? Thank you, Chair.
Actually, as we speak today, the rand is driving between 12.95, 12.65. Honourable Mashe.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and morning, everyone. I just have one question to ask. The question is around the underperformance of the entity when it regards to quarter three. I just want to find out if this underperformance will impact on the total annual performance of the entity. Because as much as I believe that there are some KPIs which are reported annually, but I would wanted to see a situation where we are taken on board to say how are those indicators performing, so that we can be able to gauge whether we are heading for an underperformance of the total entity. I just want to get that information, Chairperson, so that we are able to maybe request that even if they do not come to Cape Town, but just to give us a status quo on meeting the other KPIs that were not for reporting this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation that we received. It was quite enlightening, but I have a few questions. My question number one, you already touched on, Chairperson, the Indaba in Durban from the 16th to the 18th of May, midweek. Why was this just done? Was the stakeholders involved in this decision? And what does FET wishes to reach with this decision? Then, Chairperson, the office closures. First, the CFO said 77% of the budget is already spent. That I assume that it's a quarter three. But we are today on the 17th of March, almost quarter four is almost done. Can you at this stage tell us whether the remaining 23% is well on its way to be spent? The reason why I'm asking it, Chairperson, in all committees we see that towards the end of the financial year there's a fiscal dumping, and we just want to make sure that this is not going to happen. Then, Chairperson, on slide 49, quite interesting. The underspending on the India Roadshow, why was the underspending? And, Chairperson, they say they underspend due to a change in marketing campaign to align with tourism. Is it good practice to change your campaign in a third quarter? You should plan a new campaign to start with the first quarter. Because, Chairperson, you budget for things. You can't halfway decide this is not working unless you've done some monitoring and evaluation. But that tells me there was not enough research done to do a campaign like that. That's the India Roadshow. Then, CFO, will you chair? You say the savings with regard to the vacancies. First, my question, vacancies. Do we compromise on service delivery when we have vacancies? Can you tell me that people, temps, will do the same quality of work that permanent personnel do? Then, Chairperson, the savings, I want to know from the CFO, that savings, are they included in some way? You mentioned a number of 773.1. Is that included there, the savings of the vacancies that are there? Yeah, I've talked about Indaba, and I think I've come to near to the end. I've asked the question of the vacancies. CEO, you said Africa, if I understood you correctly, Africa makes 3% of the world's tourist market. Is that what you said? Of the continent. The continent, 3% of the world tourism. Now, yeah, now, Chairperson, isn't that the market that we should focus more on? If only 3% of the world tourism comes from Africa. And Chairperson, I've seen a month ago the minister in Iran. And we know there is a regime change there. So that is an untapped market. What strategies? I know that you can't say it here, but I leave it for your APP. When you, I would like to know what strategies have you done, how have you strategized around invading that market? Since we have a very vibrant Muslim community in South Africa, especially in places like Durban and here in Cape Town, where we have grave sites of great people, great Muslim peoples, that we could use to get hold of that market. Yeah, I've talked about the staff turnover. And then the last question, Chairperson, I don't get a satisfactory answer with regard to the short-lived initiative. I like numbers. You must quantify for me. Is this a successful? And I see it's seasonal. You can't do it seasonal. It's now a long weekend. There's nothing about a short leg. This is the ideal time to tell our people, go from here, travel 100 kilometers. That is what you can see there. And you must also concentrate on the provinces such as my province, Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape and Northwest. And then, Chairperson, CEO also spoke about the stakeholders' involvement. SAT, do you really think there's enough involvement, especially with regard to provincial and our local stakeholders? I've seen in the newspaper, Chairperson, the Honourable Faust asked a question from the Department of Tourism. I think there's 277 local camping sites or things like that that isn't operational or something like that. It is dilapidated. What is your role with convincing our local stakeholders to do better in that regard? Thank you, Chairperson, for your indulgence.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And let us welcome the presentation that we got this morning. I've got just two comments and one question. I wanted to find out, during your stakeholder engagement that you have already done, which issues were raised sharply during those engagements? And how are you planning to address them as an entity? I want also to commend you on the issue of trying to move out from the outsourcing of services. It's very good. Really, in an area or in a country where we have 27% of people who are unemployed, I think this will be a good move to also reduce this percentage that we're having, which is very high. We also want to comment you on the unqualified report that you got. Please maintain it and let us not drop. Thank you.
Chairperson, South African Tourism is conducting monthly surveys around all nine provinces. What is the outcome of these surveys? And how do they strategize to implement some of the things that the surveys produce? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
having done this round does not stop you from asking further questions from the responses that you get from SAT. Most of the things that I had and wanted to ask, the members have touched on them. For instance, I'm not sure whether you should call the vacancy rate as the funding there, as savings, or you've set that money aside, but you haven't saved on it because there's nothing on which to use it. The second thing that has already been queried, 3% Africa is just 3% tourism in Africa. Is there any role that South Africa and the region can play to improve on that amount? For instance, at Indaba we usually have ministerial roundtables. Out of that communication, have there not been strategies that have been developed so that the in Africa improves on its tourism performance? India, we usually talk of two areas, Mumbai and Delhi. Which area of India have there been difficult with roadshows? And what do you think the cause may be? Because there's also the problem of facilitation centers by the Department of Home Affairs. So is there any relationship between that problem? Maybe Honorable Krumbok actually asked this question, and I had it. Have you ever benchmarked with other countries around domestic tourism? For instance, not so long ago, Kenya has been one of the best countries around domestic tourism. But before we swallowed that, Morocco had bypassed Kenya. And maybe if our researcher goes to search again, some other Africa country might have surpassed Morocco. So Indaba is already said and done. But with so much tourist arrivals, particularly during the third quarter and beginning of fourth quarter, what is the social impact of those arrivals? Because we are always looking forward that the more there are arrivals, the more social impact we have to see. We are sorry about the criminal elements and all that, and the xenophobic, Afrophobic problems, and it really hits also, particularly in Africa. And this time it was one country in particular, and that's one country which is we've got an office. Can you respond on those questions? And also, Honorable Member, seeing that we've got a bit of leisure of time, may follow up with with answers. Enda, we hope you also will respond to some of the questions. Say we hope you also will respond to some of the questions because you've been in Hollywood. That you've been taken out of Hollywood, you still have to answer some of the questions. Thank you very much.
I thank you for your kindness, Chair. But I am my figures owner, actually, yeah. And I try to look like I know what I'm talking about. But at times, it's all about posturing. I'm joking. So yes, definitely, this is a team effort, and I'll start to cover some things, and I'm happy that the other team members start to come in. Let me tackle...
Sorry, CEO. We would like to hear Nomzamo as well.
There we go. Thank you. Team, what I'll do is let me tackle the domestic tourism and link up all those questions, and I'll leave the others basically to pick up another side. Honorable Kombrook, you are right. It's we have to look at the science behind why we're seeing this score. Well, I mean the decline essentially. You know, having a quarter decline of 20% is almost kind of jumps in your face, and it talks to about a couple of things. And I'm gonna it talks to the first one is around how we collate statistics around domestic in the first place, right? So making sure is that are we really capturing the activity that is happening? Number one, I'll talk about our sample sizes. They're relatively small. Number two, I'll also talk about how we sample. It's manual, right? It's literally getting someone at a service station, asking them questions or a toll gate or whatever it is. I would like to see more technology being used in this space so that we can get more real-time, more accurate, more granular type of statistics. I need to be able, in order for us to be sharp and be deliberate in our response, we need data, live data that says region X is suffering because of Y, X, Y, and Z. At the moment, we're very gray. You know, we put very, you know, affordability. What do we mean by affordability? So at what mark is become affordable? Is it 20 rand? Is it 50 rand? So in our OD structure, we really build the whole capability around what we call insights and analytics. That gives us market intelligence so that we can stand over here and saying, based on the trend that we've seen, the following things, and I can speak with a bit more certainty. At the moment, we have to feel our way through. Linked to that, however, is that we're in a very interesting space in the sense that we don't own the product. The industry owns the product. And in my interactions with the industry, the existing industry that is, the focus is on international markets. They have absolutely no deliberate attempt at saying we will focus on domestic. A couple of reasons why they give me. One, international, their prices basically, they can charge whatever they want. Secondly as well, even in the low season, they would rather do maintenance than actually market domestically. So you find that domestically they start to fill in the gaps as and when. But that in itself is not doomsday. It brings about the opportunity. So you've talked about the stock that lies with provincial tourism authorities, that lies with local government authorities. How do we bring those on board deliberately for the domestic market? So at the moment, there is no deliberately for the domestic market. Nothing has been deliberately created for the domestic market. What kind of traveler are we targeting, basically? Do we need to have more aventurers or that type of thing, basically? We are working quite closely with the department on that one. With the incremental, talked about the 200 million funding they received around infrastructure development. We want to be very deliberate that when we do go out on a drive to increase the domestic tourism, we have to direct them to something. At the moment, I think we are bringing about awareness, but there is no activation or execution attempt. Even at our short left, it's about awareness. But in that short left, what's missing for me is a book button. There is no book button. You literally bring awareness, and then you have to go out and then kind of find your own activities in that regard. Collaboration becomes key. So one of the things we are talking about is looking at focus areas like sports tourism. How do we work with the PSL, as an example, to start to fill up those stadiums, where we start to have deliberate packages around certain teams as they kind of move around? So that we, us, and it will be us, it will be the PSL in this instance, and also the provincial tourism or the local tourism authority. If there's a game in Limpopo, how do we make sure that we use those platforms to drive some tourism activity? We've got some great relationships, but we haven't tied them together. We've got a partnership with the SA Taxi Association. We've got a partnership with the Stockfell Association. But we've got a partnership with the toll gate, as an example, even sure, but we're not driving towards them towards a specific ideal at the moment. So what are we saying? Is it $5.99 for the weekend? Is it $2.99? Where, how? We want to be deliberate in terms of how we link those kind of issues over there. So I suppose what I'm just trying to say is that the improvement that we have to do is more market intelligence so that we can make more sharper decisions, so we can start to see trends, so that when we see a drop in a certain quarter, we've got to be able to give you granular reasons. We've got to give ourselves granular reasons as to what is happening basically, what are some of the issues on the ground. We also, in my view, have not done enough to really understand the market that we're trying to make move. So domestic is very generic. Who in domestic are we looking at? What are their traveling habits? Where do we want them to take to? And I think we want to start to chisel away at that. There's a whole concept around inclusive growth that links to some of the questions the chair have around what's the social impact of arrivals? Where is it felt? To us, inclusive growth means about growing the sector by bringing new players in. And to me, the domestic gap brings a nice opportunity to bring new players in who are able, whether through concessions or whatever agreement basically, with the stock that lies in the hands of the provinces and local authorities to bring them online so that we can drive specific numbers to that space. Is it budget? Is it value? Is it 3 stars? Is it 2 stars? Is it 4 stars? You know, so when you talk budget, are we talking backpacking? Are we talking 4 stars, an example? You know, so we really have to be specific. And is that, you know, kind of economic view that you spoke of that will start to become the driver within how we look at these things? Short lift, consistency, you are right, Honourable Member. How do we make sure as well that we become granular and start to have what I call the book button, the activation? At the moment, we're measuring hits. I can tell you how many people come and look at our websites. But then the other angle can't tell me what are those hits, how many did we convert, where did we convert them to. It becomes a separate exercise of a cursory conversation with industry to get a sense from them where they're looking at it. And so we want to tie this together. And I hope I'm not making excuses, but I'm just trying to show you what the future looks like and what we are building towards so that we can start to have a bit more intelligence and focus basically around the spaces as we bring through. We want to have more product mix at the moment. As I said, is that the existing industry, bar a few, a lot are not focusing. They're focusing on the hard currency coming into this country because they can charge more for it basically and the perspective. And that's a business imperative that they would have. But the budget side, the side that caters for South Africans is kind of missing that regard. But that's an opportunity again because we want to elevate those B&Bs, those operators who are not visible, you know, to the market, target market that they have. What's our role as SAT? How do we use technology and bring about platforms that allow these B&Bs to be visible basically to the target audiences there? And that's part of the work that I talked about the grading council about the basket of benefits. One of them has got to be all of our traded entities that are becoming members of the grading council need to be exposed in some platform or the other, that when a South African lands in a town or a village, they're able to search the site based on what's available over there and give those guys a bit more airtime in that regard. I think that's kind of how we want to tie up some of those things. Is it PSL? Is it gospel? Is it, you know, so we're looking at deliberate interventions and activities that will drive the traffic over there. Talking about geographic spread, we want to use events as a magnet that pulls people to specific areas within the country. No one's going to go to and what we'll call typically an obscure unknown space unless something takes them there. And when they are there, they will discover the environment and actually become a repeat traveler into that space. So we want to use events and start to position them deliberately, not in the obvious spaces, but in the outliers that we know we can also showcase whilst doing that space, basically. I'm going to pause on that for a second and I'll hand to the team, and then I'll pick up any other things that they may have left behind.
Thank you, Chair. I was trying very hard to say nothing. But maybe from the department's perspective, Chair, is that we
we appreciate the kind of engagement that's happening here, because it's some of it is issues that we would like to better understand from the board, particularly issues relating to understanding the underlying issues relating to performance, where we are doing well, as well where we are not doing so well, because it assists us to, you know, take future decisions. If we are doing particularly well in a particular market, it's better to understand why it is so that maybe we can use lessons from those areas to apply in areas where we are not doing so well. And where we are not doing so well, particularly with domestic, it's a policy position of the minister that how critical domestic tourism is. So if you're not doing so well, for us it is better to use this reporting process to quite understand with what is going on there and what should we be doing differently and better. So the engagement, even here in Parliament, assists us to do that, and the report that SAT is submitting to the Department as well assists to have that conversation. It's the one thing. And then just to say that we also understand our role now in the Department as an enabler, and a parent department, but also as an enabler for SAT to do its part. Some of the issues that are being raised here are really those unblocking issues which lie with the department. You know, when you're talking about what is going on at Oratambo and the responsible department there, and how as tourism we are engaging with them to bring to their attention and understand what does tourism need from them to grow. So we understand those unblocking issues to be sitting squarely with the department, the issues around what are the institutional arrangements maybe that we have on coordination at provincial and local government. You know, we are having that conference soon with local government particularly. And then also just our oversight role to ensure that on the governance side, supporting the minister, to ensure that on the governance side, the board acts plays its role within the acceptable practices of governance. We have to do all of that, our own role, while allowing the board to play its legislated responsibility. It's a balance that we have to always strike, to always, as much as we are a unit, but, you know, staying in our lane and playing our role without intervening with the board's interfering with the board's legislated position to market South Africa domestically and internationally, and play our supporting role in terms of resource allocation, for instance, and oversight. And just that the reporting does assist us as well to answer some of the questions that assist us to give our views to the minister around oversight of SAT.
Honourable members, I think there are three questions to me, but specifically to me. The office closure is 77%, will we spend 23% and do not fiscal dumping? That's exactly for that reason why we had an extraordinary budget exco on the 2nd of March, to make sure that we do not fiscal dumping and there is proper plans in place how to expend those funds. So that is we can confirm that we will not do fiscal dumping in terms of that. The India Roadshow, it's really a timing issue. And the timing issue is that with the new treasury guidelines, the most of the funds are going for upfront payments, which is accommodation, which is a normal trend in industry, and also to pay for flights. And that's a normal trend in industry to have upfront payments. But if you deviate, you must approach the treasury. So it was only, instead of spending the money in December, we've spent the money in January, and that was really to obtain the approval from a national treasury that we comply with those deviations. So that was obtained from a treasury, and the money wasn't properly spent in terms of that. So I think that is an India question. Then in terms of the savings, from all of these questions was from Honourable Adams, the savings, is the savings included in the 773 million rand? No. The previous quarters, yes. But for this quarter, no. The only reallocations what we do is in the next month, in January, and that will be in the final. Then in January, you will see the impact or the changes of the money that is going to marketing. The savings is going to marketing. So remember, at that year end, it was not done. And based on those figures, of that quarter end, based on those figures, we then set and do reallocations as a team to see where are the high priorities and risk areas in the organization in SAC. I think those are the questions that, unless I've missed one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question from Honourable Makubele Mashela on the other KPIs which are not due for reporting. In fact, 2 days ago we had a board meeting, so we were able to actually give them preliminary results of what is the likelihood of us actually meeting these targets. So we welcome that recommendation. We can actually write back to the committee with preliminary results just to show progress against the other indicators. And Honourable Adams asked about Indaba and the shifting dates and what is the process that we engage in terms of, or what informed the change in date. Following Indaba 2016, we did an extensive stakeholder engagement. Part of the things, or one of the key reasons given by industry around the date for Indaba is that in most cases, if you look at where the date is positioned, the buying cycle has essentially started. So meaning trade has already concluded, the brochures internationally. So by the time they come here, it is a showcase a platform rather than we're here to actually write business, because already at that time trade has already committed logistically, they've committed how they're going to package the destination. So it is a continuous debate that we're having with trade and all the stakeholders to say what is a suitable time for us to stage this trade show. The other question that came from Honourable Adams is the issue of vacancies. To say, are we compromising service delivery because of the vacancies? I guess it was a difficult position that management found itself in. But here in a public entity which is trying to reposition itself to respond to one ministerial review, two stakeholder issues that were recommended, we had to actually toy around, do we bring in full-time employees, not knowing how our strategy would be. So we actually followed a concept which says structure must actually follow strategy in this instance. But in actually hiring the contract workers, we're very deliberate. We went for specialist roles or specialist, contract workers who would actually provide a meaningful service to the business. So we're quite careful to ensure that we do not compromise service delivery. The CFO has already mentioned that part of the savings was to actually bolster our marketing efforts rather than actually spending it on operational costs. There was a question again around what are some of the issues, which I think the CEO would be able to respond better, what are some of the issues that are coming out of the engagement with stakeholders and what are some of the plans that we're actually putting in place to deal with that. Honourable Adams asked about Iran. If you look at the results or in the PEC, there's a world map which we show actually the growth in the Middle East. And in our new strategic plan that we've now tabled with Parliament, you would see that Middle East becomes one of our critical markets. In fact, we're going to service that out of our India office together with Southeast Asia, by the way, because we feel that the consumer behavior around that region there are some commonalities, and it is one of the growth markets that we've got to really focus on. And in fact, the additional funding that we got from Treasury was us presenting to Treasury our marketing investment framework and actually highlighting the growth potential that lies within the Middle East, Southeast Asia region. And Africa's market share being 3% if you look at the global tourism. You would remember, Chair and Honourable Members, that Africa was one of the areas which was afforded or which was allocated ring-fenced amount, because we felt that there is growth potential, both in leisure and business tourism, by the way. Because if you look at how we stage Meetings Africa, Meetings Africa is South Africa trying to advancing Africa together. So there's that element of acknowledging the power that we have as a continent. Our regional director is working very closely with, in fact, African tourism agencies as well, to see how do we then begin to exchange, because it cannot be South Africa wanting
travel into South Africa from the rest of the continent. We should actually also encourage our own people to travel into the rest of Africa. So Africa becomes quite a critical market for us. We can actually see how we resource it. In fact, we operate or we service it out of head office because we understand, you know, obviously the complexities of actually dealing with a business on the ground. And domestic benchmarking, with the example of Kenya and Morocco, Chair, you've made that point. I think it's something that we've got to take up as an agency and begin to actually look at how do we then bolster our research around domestic and understanding the very same market. I need to mention that part of the things that we'll be doing is when we conduct Brand Tracker, it was only on international, but now we've now introduced a Brand Tracker where we're going to track and try and understand the domestic market, what actually drives it. And also, I thought Nomzamo will talk about some of the projects that the department is having to address Honorable Force's questions around how do we then promote, you know, the discounted resorts, and how do we ensure that, obviously, our provincial and city counterparts actually take seriously renovating these resorts, so that we are able to market them as South African tourism and actually implement our mandate, which is marketing of the very same report results or budget results. I'll hand over back to the CEO and...
thank you, Chair, through you. I think I've just got a few responses, specifically around the domestic tourism, what potentially could have resulted in that shift and the decrease. One thing we need to realize is the fact that school terms have shifted. They've now been aligned nationally. Before, they used to have a staggered effect. Okay. Now, a lot of destinations didn't take that into consideration as far as their planning is concerned. So what this could be is one of those underlying effects of an alignment of holidays, and you also see it now when it comes to high season. So that because of that alignment, the numbers that you had last year, and if you're doing a year-on-year comparison, you'll see the shift immediately. So that's one of the underlying factors that we are currently assuming could be a reason for a decrease in holiday travel. The second thing is also that we need to realize that the behavior of the consumer has shifted. South Africans wait a little bit longer to be lastminute.com when they purchase. Because before is they used to say, well, okay, I'm going to plan, I'm going to put my leave in for now. But what happens is once they become under financial pressure or these other factors, they change their behavior, and therefore they will book lastminute.com. So as much as you want to influence the buying pattern, you need to understand those triggers and how you affect that through your marketing and, of course, your conversion. Something else that we have also noticed is shift in weather patterns, because, again, there's been a lot more rain in some of the areas in South Africa, and that has influenced people's travel plans who want to go there for sunshine. So people are also shifting where they are going to and also making shorter stays, et cetera, in order to capitalize on that. So it's understanding that there are certain factors outside of the control of your marketing, but I think to the point of the CEO is how do you use technology and data and insights a lot smarter in your marketing, in your campaigns, but also being able to make the right tactical shifts in that in order to deal with those changes. And I think that's part of when I look at the marketing investment framework activities that the team are looking at. The other question was just around some of the pricing and discounted pricing of attractions. Now, one of the things that attractions will start looking at is what they call dynamic pricing. Before, they used to give you one price for the day. Now, what they understand is that they've got capacity issues. Everybody wants to go up the mountain all at the same time. So what they decide to do is saying, well, how do we stagger that? So what they've done is like the... It's called dynamic pricing. So it's a different price at different times in the day in order to allow and deal with those volumes. So, for example, international tourists could afford to pay at any rate because of exchange rate. They may choose the premium times, but South Africans then can get it at a discounted rate. It's just about managing that, which also then deals with capacity. And I think that's one thing that attractions need to look at is how do you manage the flow of people through that, through pricing. Hotels have been doing it for a long time. Airlines also do it. It's called dynamic pricing. So it's, again, some of the shifts in the industry themselves that is affecting, you know, how you do conversion. And the marketing, and from the CEO's perspective, is that the engagement with industry and understanding those dynamics is important in their marketing efforts, because it used to be siloed before. The industry used to do their own thing. SAT used to do its own thing. And what I have seen, speaking on behalf of the industry, is that there has been a deliberate shift in the engagement and collaboration in order to share and saying, well, how do we grow this pie collectively? Exchange rates always becomes a difficult thing to measure and manage. Again, changing behaviors. But people don't say, I'm going to go to that destination and what is the exchange rate first. People first have a bucket list. And they're saying, these are the destinations I'm going to go to. And this is the size of my wallet. Because they will deal in dollars or euros. They don't really care about, you know, what it is then. And then they give it over to our operators and say, well, this is the amount of money I've got for holiday. And they then pick. Now, that's where the influence happens. Is those two operators who get commission-based who decide on where do they want to give their visit an opportunity to be able to spend. But we should also realize that even the demographics of people's behavior, not of behavior, but where they are in their life stage influences where they go to and how they spend. So, for example, someone that's close to retirement, behavior of purchasing to go on holiday is far different from a youth traveler in his decision to go on holiday. So a youth traveler, he will spend mommy and daddy's money, and he will go anywhere in the world because he's not paying for it. Whereas a pensioner will be a little bit more prudent in their decisions around where I'm going to go to. Then exchange rate factors into the decision of which destination they go to. But what you will see is that exchange rate is actually the biggest influences in destination. So once they arrive in the destination, as the exchange rate fluctuates on a daily basis for them, they either get more or they get less when they purchase in the destination. But it's also the timing between deciding when to go, when you purchase, and when you visit. And I think understanding that cycle in your marketing and conversion efforts is important in order to capitalize on that and then shift it accordingly on that. The other thing was, well, is that there's another influencer in the accommodation space that affects numbers and reporting. It's Airbnb. So the thing is, what we need to do also look at is how do we include the previously informal accommodation sector, because they also are now influencing domestic tourism. So it's also including that in the numbers to understand what the real impact and where the shifts are. So again, this is just about understanding disruptors. What is their how do you quantify that? And then how do you influence travel in that space? Yeah, I think I will end there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Eva. Thank you, team. I think just to round off then, in terms of the chair asked, in our stakeholder engagements, what are the issues coming up? The main one is SA Tourism's relevance within the local authorities. How are we working together? How are we aligning ourselves? Just because we don't report into each other does not mean that we can align ourselves. And I think this is just an example of Envo comes from the CEO of Cape Town Authority. They are much more closer to the ground on the issues, basically, that are there. So therefore, it becomes important that the work that we do gets translated into action at the local level. Otherwise, I think there'll be a big disjunction on that side. The second one becomes around collaboration. What you're finding as well, all the provincial, each provincial tourism authority has either employed someone or invested some time in getting a consultant to do some research for them. So guess what? Nine provinces have nine different pieces of research, but there is no one for the country that is aligned. So we all kind of go in different directions. So collaboration, how do you work together? How do you, as SA Tourism, become part, you know, the sharp end of the spear, basically, so that others can follow behind it? So these are deliberate things that we are having conversation, we're going to be tangible, basically, on. Indaba is one of them, right, whereby the level of consultation is probably not as deep as it should be. The provinces are very clear about some of the things they want to do around Indaba, you know, whereby sometimes the municipalities that are within their province, they want them housed within, you know, the same spaces in Indaba as well. So there's no shortage, in my mind, I find, of forums, but they're more compliance-driven as opposed to meaningful engagement, you know. So we are really going to excellent to start to engage on that side. Trade is very adamant also around Indaba. You hear the same thing. It's old, it's stale, it needs a refresh. So it's definitely something we're looking at, right? It can't just be the same old, same old, same old. There's competition around. I mean, the moment you become complacent, other entities start to come in and pick up the noise from their perspective, right? So really, we are really bringing our stakeholders in so that they can become part of the conversation as opposed to us just kind of relying on them on arm's length. Domestic conversation is also another one. Again, our efforts need to be linked up with industry, with the different tourism authorities. We can't just, again, in a vacuum by ourselves, let's say tourism, think we're going to change this. We have to act with the players on the ground who actually understand much closely what the capacity issues are, what the seasonality issues are, because there's no point in promoting a destination that's already full. However, in 3 months' time, it's going to be empty. So we need to make sure we sequence our push, basically, for those particular spaces. Chair, unless we've left out something, the last one around difference between Mumbai and Delhi and just the issues around visas and the processing basically of them. You know, the India example is a very good example of where the blame can't just be put on the policy side, because you've got within the same country two different Home Affairs offices and they perform fundamentally different. One processes it quite quickly, quite easily, efficiently, and delivers them. The other one, with the exact same policy, does not operate as efficiently. And as a result, the more barriers you put in front of travelers, the more basically we push people away. Enver talked about trends that we see. India market, the policy there, you don't apply for leave 6 months ahead. You apply for leave in that month, you're taking it in. So you can imagine now trying to travel to South Africa and you decide the month to submit the leave. But if your visa processing takes a month itself, you're out of the game. You're literally out of the game. You know, so part of the effort that we have to try to do is to bring people into this whole tourism environment, that even if you are not working directly in tourism, you do have an impact. As an immigration officer working at OR Tambo, you've got to do your job, but with the lens of tourism, whether you're a policeman or whatever, but with the lens of tourism, that understanding when you sit on applications that you're not processing, you're actually hampering a contribution to GDP of a country, the perspective. Well, you have to make those links. So these are just two examples of exact same policies, but implemented differently. We work through the minister on this one, through cabinet as well, and through the interministerial committees that he sits in. We feed him all of these statistics and issues, and they handle it basically at that level. That does not to say that we don't have our tactical conversations with our counterparts, where we start to bring them to view on some of the issues that are there. Yes, there's a view that says, what's the problem? Because the tourism numbers are going up, so therefore you can't blame it on our efficiency if you're Home Affairs. I agree. I think they could be doing so much more. The opportunities are so much bigger. Just to give a tangible example, you know, annually there are 5 million German tourists that travel to Turkey. But because of the social political issues, they're no longer going to Turkey. They're looking for a new place to go to. That's 5 million. Right? We could get our statistics done, the 5 and 5 in 1 year if we get this right. That's 5 million. So therefore we ask ourselves is then, how do we ensure that we bring these tourists and profile South Africa as a destination? It is long haul. So therefore, we have to make sure that we are sharp and focused. Whilst Germany does not require visas from us, there is also the issue of the interpretation around unabridged certificates for children. Unfortunately, that interpretation sits with the airlines, because they become the first area of screening. And if these airlines take the inconsistency, they could take a very stringent view that if you don't have all of your unabridged certificates, you can't board the aircraft. Meanwhile, the regulation has been relaxed, says it's advisable, but they would take the most stringent view, conservative view, because they don't want to be on the wrong side of the law, where then they get penalized, basically, and they have to bring some of these passengers back. So I think all of these things start to play into their spaces. But together with the industry, together with the stakeholders, our agendas are starting to be aligned regularly. We're not there yet, Chair, but we are making good progress. We are really making good progress in that regard. I think from our side, thank you very much, unless there's any more questions from the floor.
I would like to thank SAT very much, and also to inform you that our content advisor and researcher attending the research summit. which we left in Kanye. And stay, actually America is taking on to Iran because it's now free for the first time and they want to exploit those opportunities. And also for Indaba, I think it is important that wherever Indaba goes, if it moves from where it has been, I think it's important also to arrange for people to see the flavor of the country so that it begins to entice them, so that they come for other things after Indaba. For instance, they do not know what's going around in the closest rural areas, in the closest townships, Kamzoli and whatever have you. So such things might just, you know, be of interest to the visitors or to the exhibitors or whoever. And we are quite happy that you are bringing in more, not hidden gems this time, but gems that are visible, not occult in some corner there. And also, your presentation does not like the department did. Their report was not what they presented, but what they presented was well above the report. So, I don't know, you seem to have done better than what you have reported, and you seem to have accounted better than what is in the report. And maybe next time, I even said, maybe this quarterly report was written 4 weeks back, because what they're reporting now is what sounds more clear. We encourage you to restructure and get good personnel so that you get good service. But thank you very much. And have a good flight back home. As a committee, we'll just remain behind for about 5 minutes for Jerry just to give us what's happening in our oversight week after next.
See you again.
Thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, is, I'm sure when I just left the floor to answer to this phone, my counterparts in the province, in the Free State, they were calling. Because I've tried to call them early this morning. Unfortunately, they were still in meetings. But what he was reporting to me was that there's a lot of progress because teams are meeting on that side, the office of the premier, the legislature, and the provincial department in preparation for our oversight. What they said they will do, Chair, this afternoon, they are going to send back that program that we've sent to them. With all what we requested to them, a fully fledged program, so that we can share it with the committee. By the time we leave, at least we're all on the same page as to what is going to start, where, how, and all of that. So we are expecting that Chairperson this afternoon, Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. And I am hoping we'll be seeing more stakeholders than going to the SRIs. I think we've seen a lot of them. We'd like to hear from the people what's going on in the area of tourism for them and for the province. Thank you very much.
Chair, then the other thing, Chair, we wanted just to raise with the committee. Chair, members will notice in the program of the portfolio committee for this quarter. Next week, we were supposed to have a meeting with the small business. The response we have received from them, that committee has requested that meeting of next week, 24th,
we defer it to the next quarter, honorable members. Reason being that they said there are so many issues before them this quarter, and what makes things more difficult for them is that they've got a piece of legislation that they have to deal with it in this quarter. So they have proposed that we defer the meeting to the next quarter. So all in all, it means we have no one to meet next week. I am not sure, Chairperson, whether can't we propose to the chair that on the basis of that, and then we don't have a committee meeting next week because of these oversights that will be taking place, and then Uche can free us so that we can pay more attention in the preparation for the provincial oversight in the following week. I'm not sure that was the view, Chairperson, that we just we were having a conversation as a support staff in preparation for Free State.
Committee members, do you want any meeting? We've got minutes to adopt, but we don't necessarily want a meeting to adopt the minutes. Maybe we could set a Wednesday on which to adopt the minutes so that people are free on Friday. But I'm giving that to you as committee members. Honorable Masek.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
I was just checking as to whether won't it be possible for us to adopt the minutes when we come back, because Monday is Tuesday is going to be a holiday. So we have only Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for next week, and some people are going for the oversight. Is it possible that we can adopt them next when we come back?
You mean come back from recess or come back from oversight?
From recess, or even if it's possible to do it during the oversight, we could also do that during the oversight.
It will depend on time, because by the end of the day, people are very exhausted.
Mm.
But it's okay. Honorable Crumple.
Chair, I support that we do it when we come back from the recess. Not because people are tired, but because I just think if we had to convene a meeting simply to approve minutes, we must take into account the taxpayers are going to have to pay for our flights. And I'm sure that's frivolous and wasteful expenditure. We must approve the minutes, but we should do it at a time when we're having a meeting anyway and not drain the fiscus unnecessarily.
Some people just go on recess, right, or even during constitutional meetings.